Hello and welcome to Inside Education. Our website is insideed.com. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. This week I bring you the second of a two-part interview with Dr. Fionnuala Waldron, who is Dean of Education at St. Patrick's College. Last week we heard about the new book edited by Dr. Waldron and her colleagues titled Reimagining Initial Teacher Education, Perspectives on Transformation. It is published by the Liffey Press. This week we focus on another area where Fionnuala Waldron has substantial expertise, and that is the teaching of history. I first asked Fionnuala to tell me, what are the ingredients of a good history lesson?
I think it comes back to why you would teach history, you know, in the first place. And I suppose people have different views about why you teach history. History is one of those subjects where we can really learn what it is to be human, and learn what it is to be human at different times, in different contexts, in different spaces. So again, it introduces us, or introduces children, to the idea that not everybody thinks the same way, and people at different times thought in different ways, and on the basis of that thinking made different choices and did different things, or had different kinds of constraints that they were living under. So that they, you know, children will often say, well, why do they do that? You know, they should have done something else. Why didn't they do that? So understanding that I suppose people's choices and people's lives are constrained in many ways by the historical context in which they're living, and by the way they see the world. And this idea that people can see the world differently, you know, and that your own people, to put it that way, your ancestors or your grandparents or great grandparents didn't necessarily see the world the way you did. And there's huge learning in that. But I think the other aspect of history, as it is as a subject in schools where there's huge learning, is just even an understanding the nature of history itself. So the idea that historical knowledge isn't fixed, that it's provisional, that it's dependent on having the evidence, that it can change over time, and our understanding of the past can change over time. And I think those kinds of understandings are really very important if we're going to go beyond the idea that there is a single correct story about our past, and that's not going to change. And particularly in Ireland, where we have a contested national story, if you want to put it that way, if you look on an all-Ireland basis particularly, where there are conflicting views and contestations around history. And it's very evident now in the decade of commemorations that we're in. Just for children to understand that history itself isn't fixed. You know, the past is fixed, we can't change that, but our interpretation of that isn't fixed. And what we know about that changes depending on the questions that we ask, depending on the evidence that is available or becomes available, and so on. And that, you know, that interpretations of the past change over time. Now, these are really serious learnings. You know, they're not... and they're not learnings that can be left until somebody's in university. You know, you can't go through primary school and second level school thinking history is one thing and then change to think it is something else at university level. You need to understand from the start that we construct historical knowledge through interpreting evidence. And that is something you can begin in junior infants. And, you know, that's what is so, I think, I suppose so wonderful for me around the teaching of history, because there is just so much you can do at primary level that's going to lay the basis, I think, for a really good historical understanding that isn't about learning dates or learning content. You know, it's really about, again, coming back to the idea of living in a democratic society. And one of the I suppose, one of the downsides of history teaching, as it has been traditionally in Ireland and elsewhere, is around the use of the textbook, and the textbook becomes the history lesson and drives the history lesson. And I think we just miss out on so much by doing that. There is a lot of really good practice that I see all of the time out in schools, where teachers are encouraging children to ask questions, where those questions are then being used as a basis for an inquiry into a topic or into an event, into a period, where they're engaging children with images from the past, with documents from the past, with oral histories and so forth, bringing them out into the landscape, into the built environment. So it's building up this idea that we ask questions about the past, we look to see what does the evidence tell us in response to those questions. And we, on the basis of that, we construct an understanding of the past, you know, and that understanding is influenced by our perspective, and that we understand that that is the case for history, that history in itself is not a neutral narrative. And I think that is really critical knowledge for citizens to have.
And you're saying that this knowledge can be developed from the age of four, which is when children start in primary school. What might it look like at that age?
There is a principle that underpins our primary curriculum that we probably don't articulate enough, but it is there. And it's this idea that comes from Jerome Bruner, who was a very important educationalist psychologist in the 1960s. And it's the idea that children can engage with really complex ideas from at any age, if it's appropriately mediated at an appropriate level, at a level that's appropriate for them. So you can take really complex ideas and look at, well, how can we engage four-year-old children with these ideas? Where's the starting point? Because what you're talking about with children always are emergent understandings. You're not looking for the finished understanding of anything. You're looking for your starting point, and you're then looking for the opportunities to build on that. So with children and junior infants, looking at the idea that you begin with themselves and you work outwards, which is a kind of a principle that the curriculum works on. I mean, that's a good principle. So looking at their own lives as children, looking at the lives of children, of their parents as children, the lives of their grandparents as children, and so on. But I think moving out from that, I don't think you confine yourself to that, using images, using objects, using the built environment. So even in terms of the environment of the school, looking to see what is new, what is old, how do we know that that is older than that, you know, how do we make those kinds of judgments, looking at old objects and again trying to decide what they might have been used for, why do we think this is old, you know, what is it that tells us that this is older than this, and so forth, and again looking at the same in images and so on. And I think what's really important with children is getting them to justify their answers. Well, I think that this is older than this because, you know, and maybe getting them to think in terms of, well, is it because of the materials it's made from? Is it because of how it's looks? Maybe it's rusty and it's dirty and so on. Is it because of its design and so forth? So trying to get them to think through the ideas that they get from the evidence, I think, is important as well.
You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Podcasts of previous programmes are available from iTunes or from our website insideed.com. My guest today is Dr. Fionnuala Waldron from St. Patrick's College Drumcondra. On last week's programme, we discussed the integration of subjects, and Fionnuala mentioned the risk of trivialising history by overusing materials such as, say, Viking helmets with the horns on them in history class. But what resources are helpful in teaching history?
I think in the teaching of history, for me, some of the most valuable resources are actually the historical evidence that is there. So I think with primary children, particularly younger children, historic old objects, images, oral history is very, very powerful. So I would actually look to historical sources in terms of the resources that I would use. But also, as you get older, then the idea of using historical accounts. And I suppose this is where the textbook comes in. Because I wouldn't ever say you never use a textbook in history, because to a large extent, the textbook to the child is the same as a historian's book to a historian, another historian's book. It's your account, your historical account, one of the historical accounts you use in order to construct your story. So I think the resources that you use in history are built around the kinds of evidence that you use with children. But also, I mean, when you look at what's available now in terms of film, in terms of your access over the, you know, via the internet to images, to documentary evidence, which I suppose is the documentary evidence, I suppose, comes into play in the senior end of the school. But also using story, using myth, but it's in how we use story and myth. You know, myths and legends have always been used in the teaching of history, but it's how we use them, I think, is important. So drawing out the historical from the myth, from the legend, looking at what is it about the myth that could be true, that might be true, that is probably not true. And at looking at what the meaning of the myth might have been for that community. So why was this myth created in the first place? You know, what did that particular myth, what need did that particular myth serve? So I think the resources are not difficult to find, and how you use the resources is the important thing. I mean, one of the things that I think over the years since the 1970s, if I were looking to the UK system for anything, I would be looking to it for the teaching of history. That's up until quite recently, so I don't think that Michael Gove is going to him. I think he's going to roll back a lot of the good practice that has been there. But you know, they engaged in this kind of historical work very early on in the 70s and 80s and so on. And they've built up a great tradition and expertise in the area of inquiry-based teaching in history, historical, and using historical inquiry as kind of your mode of teaching history. And I think there's a lot of good practice out there that teachers can even access on the internet in looking at models of good practice, in looking at the kinds of inquiry-led lessons that you can create for quite young children. I think those resources are readily available there.
How's the teaching of history today different to what it was like, say, 20, 50, 100 years ago? How has it changed?
I think it has changed quite dramatically. I suppose if you go back even 50 years ago, the dominant, I suppose, view of what history teaching was like at the time was that, first of all, that it was all transmission based. So there was a single story, a single narrative, and children were told that, or they read that, or they learned that. And there wasn't really any colour or any deviation from that, and largely speaking it was the national narrative and told from a particular nationalist perspective. So that would have been the dominant experience of history. It would also have been very textbook based, and that, you know, any study that has been done would support that. Things began to change a little bit in the 1970s with what we still call the new curriculum, which came the child-centred curriculum, which came in the early 1970s. And that, I think, did change the teaching of history, but not that dramatically. I mean, it brought in the idea that there is more than one way of looking at the world. It brought in the idea of multiple perspectives. It brought in the idea as well of looking more at social history. And as we progressed, we'd say through the 1980s, particularly the idea of women's history and so forth is factored into it. But it still remained quite textbook based. And also, while children were doing things like projects and research and so on, there was very little engagement really with historical sources, with historical documents and artefacts and so forth. And that would be a characteristic of good history teaching now. So I think the real change occurred in the late 90s with the most recent curriculum. And even if you look at the kinds of aims and objectives of that curriculum, they're quite different, qualitatively different, I think, than the aims of the earlier curricula. And particularly, the focus is largely on enabling children to understand the different perspectives, the different cultures, the different societies that they engage with. So it's really about engaging with difference and understanding and respecting it. So that's quite strong within it. It's about learning about past communities, but again, learning about them in a very, I suppose, learning about the context, learning about the different experiences that were within that community. So this idea that there was a single experience that everybody had is something that you try to break down. So there's no such thing as the generic child that lived in ancient Rome. You know, there were many children that lived in ancient Rome that had many diverse experiences, and the same applies to all other historical periods. Or the idea that there was one dominant experience, which was generally the male experience. So the idea that you need to look at female experiences, you need to look at the experiences of children, you need to look at the experiences of people that were in power, people that were without power, and so forth. So it has changed quite dramatically in that, doing an awful lot more of what you could call world history, I suppose, but also increasingly looking at I think areas of history that are sometimes called contested histories. So areas of history that people have different opinions about, and sometimes very strongly held opinions about. So a lot of those areas would be around our national history. So looking at 1916 now, for example, and I'm sure there will be many debates and discussions around that. So making sure that when children are engaging with 1916 in a primary context, that they don't come out thinking that there is again one single story there, that they will come out understanding that there were many groups of people who were involved in different aspects of 1916, and that all of those their stories need to be heard. So I think that kind of broader view of history, and that view that understanding that I suppose understanding that historical knowledge itself is something that we construct based on the evidence we have of the past. I think one of the most fantastic revolutions in terms of children's education that has occurred over the past 50 years. It's a more general one, but it's very particularly expressed in history, I think, as well. And that is this idea that of children being involved in their learning, the idea of children constructing their knowledge through engagement with others and with the world, rather than children being told about what it is they should know. And that expresses itself in science education through the idea of the child as scientist doing experiments, expresses itself in geography through the idea of learning through the environment, in the environment, about the environment, going on field trips and so forth. And it's expressed in history, the idea of working as a historian, so that rather than children meeting the past through a text that somebody else wrote and put in a textbook, they meet the past through engaging with objects from the past, with oral history, with documents, with accounts that other people have written, but understanding them as other people's accounts. That's what this person thinks, but maybe there is another perspective we can meet with here. And I think that makes history far more interesting and far more valuable in educational context as well.
How important is it for children to have a sense of chronology that, you know, say the lockout happened before 1916, which happened before the War of Independence and so on? Is that essential, or, you know, how does that fit in the whole teaching of history?
I think it is essential. It's very important. But it's how we go about developing that sense of chronology, I think, is the critical question there. I really have been very exercised recently about Michael Gove's his return to very old ideas about the teaching of history in the UK context, because there has been a lot of really interesting and good practice in the teaching of history in schools in the UK, and he seems to be returning to this idea that, which we used to have here, that the younger the child, the earlier the period of history they should be studying. So you get a child in third class and they begin with prehistory. And then you, as the child gets older, they meet with medieval history, and then they meet with modern history. And by the time the child gets to sixth class, they're doing 1916 and independent Ireland and so on. That was very much how we used to think about history. But if you think about that, if you unpick that, what is it saying? It's saying, first of all, that the only time that children are going to engage with very complex questions around prehistoric communities is when they are in third and fourth class, that children don't come back to those ideas when they're older and when they can understand some of the more complex aspects of it and so forth. So it's a very linear, a very narrow view of chronology, and it's equating, it's saying that earlier periods of history aren't as complex and don't have as many kind of interesting big ideas or questions in them as later periods in history. So it is important that children understand chronology, but really you do that through using mechanisms like timelines. So the idea of children visiting and revisiting different periods of history and building up their understanding of chronology through the use of activities around timelines is certainly what I would support. So I do think chronology is important. You can't understand things like cause and consequence in history unless you understand chronology. But equally, chronology doesn't mean you start the child with the youngest child with the earliest period of history and you work your way through to the oldest child doing the more recent history. That doesn't make any sense educationally, I think.
Do you have a topic in history that you really like teaching in primary school?
Well, there's a there's a hard question. Yes, I did. I loved teaching about the famine, and I think for obvious reasons, I think it has everything in it, you know, in the sense that if you're interested in social history, if you're interested in learning about and in teaching about the everyday lives of people, then obviously the famine is full of that. It also has very interesting political narrative that runs through it as well. But essentially, I think why I enjoyed teaching it with children at primary level was because the nature of the evidence that was available to us about the famine, the images of the famine from the period, from the illustrated newspapers, the documentary evidence that remains of the famine, the folklore evidence from the famine, is I think very compelling for children, because I suppose it is the most tragic event, single event in our history, and they are very human stories that are brought together in that, and children understand the tragedy of it. But I think as well it has so much to say to what happened subsequently. I mean, the events around the famine and during the famine, and particularly the consequences of the famine, are still with us today, you know, and so I think you really can't understand the rest of the 19th century or 20th century Ireland or even Ireland today without really understanding the famine. But again, it is a topic that children found it easy to connect with and easy to engage with. In terms of looking at the lives of children, it obviously has many, and there's so much evidence there to work from, you know. I suppose the other area that I always enjoyed teaching was looking at the suffragette movement, again, because I think children connect with it. There's an exciting story there. The evidence that is there is there's a lot of very visual evidence there that you can relate to, and there's children love learning about the underdog anyway, you know. So you have lots of elements in that story, and then from my own perspective, it would be an aspect of history that would interest me. Yeah.
Your passion for history and for history teaching is so evident. Where did your own interest and passion for history and history teaching come from?
Well, I've always loved history. I suppose my father loved history, and maybe it came from there. He was a local historian in County Kilkenny in Freshford, which is where I grew up, and he was a teacher. And much, much more than that also, but he had a huge interest in local history. So I suppose we rarely went on a car journey where we didn't get a history lesson as well, and I think it's something I replicated with my own children. Probably came from there. I did enjoy it in school. I took it as my specialism in teacher education, and then subsequently did my degree in it in the B.Ed. My PhD is in history as well.
And that was Dr. Fionnuala Waldron from St. Patrick's College, Drumcondra. And I interviewed her to mark the publication of the book she co-edited entitled Reimagining Initial Teacher Education, Perspectives on Transformation. And it's published by the Liffey Press. Well, that's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to or download podcasts of previous Inside Education programmes on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email me to the email address insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to this week's guest, Dr. Fionnuala Waldron from St. Patrick's College. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.